Hey guys, we got a fantastic show for you this week. I'll give you my takeaways from week 15. Then we're going to bring in a special guest to celebrate Drew Brees' accomplishment. And as always, we'll wrap things up with your questions in the mailbag. Let's go. All right, welcome in. Week 15's in the books. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. We are back. We have 2 weeks to go in the regular season. Coaching carousel starting to spin. I'm sure we'll get some questions on that in the mailbag. We've got a great guest to come on to talk about the record-breaking performance that we all witnessed on Monday night. But as we always do, we're going to start with my five takeaways from the weekend. And I don't think there's anything anywhere we can start, but with that record-breaking performance, Drew Brees was absolutely incredible on Monday night, completing 29 of 30 passes, 308 yards, 4 touchdowns, breaks Peyton Manning's all-time touchdown record. He now is at 541. Peyton Manning's at 539. Tom Brady is at 538, so that could go back and forth a little bit. But more than just the record, and the record's incredibly significant. This is a guy who, look, when he was in the Big Ten, there were questions about whether he could make it in the NFL because of his size, because of the offense he was coming from, playing in a pure spread offense there at Purdue. Five years into his career, there were questions about his shoulder, whether or not he was going to be able to come back from that. Yeah, he got to New Orleans on the heels of Katrina. Just a remarkable career. But beyond that, the Saints' offense looks like it's starting to put things together, which, look, their defense has played good for most of the year. Didn't look great against the Niners, obviously, last week, but has played pretty well for the balance of the year. They've got horses on that side of the ball. And now you're seeing what the offense looks like with Brees healthy, with Michael Thomas at the level that he's at, with Jared Cook back healthy, with Alvin Kamara in the mix. Offensively, they looked like a vintage Saints offense on Monday night. And here's the one concern that I think you have to have with the Saints. That defensive line has been sort of the nucleus of what they've done over the course of the 2019 season. Losing Marcus Davenport and Sheldon Rankins, it didn't show up on Monday night. But I wonder if at some point that's going to show up. That's two big pieces that you lose. Yes, you started the year without Rankins. Yes, Davenport broke out. It's been way better than he was in 2018. So you've sort of played without those forces before. But I think replacing those guys, certainly a part of the puzzle here as we go forward. But I've thought all along this is probably the most well-rounded roster in football. And it sure looked like it again on Monday night with an absolute thrashing of the Indianapolis Colts. I believe the final score is 34-7, but that thing was 34-0 when the Saints took their foot off the pedal. Okay, takeaway number two. Is what we're watching with the Chiefs real? Because what I'm seeing right now is sort of what we thought could be. Look, their offensive line hadn't played together since September until that game in Mexico City on the Monday night before Thanksgiving. Their offensive group as a whole, because of the injuries to Sammy Watkins and Tyreek Hill and to Pat Mahomes, they hadn't really played together since September either. And now you're getting all those guys together, and now you're getting Steve Spagnuolo's defense in for 3 months of a regular season. Frank Clark's got his feet underneath him. Tyrann Mathieu has become a real leader and a real, like, kind of captain of the secondary. And lo and behold, now the Chiefs have held 4 consecutive opponents under 20 points. And these aren't like weaklings, right? Like, now they did bring the Broncos this week, but the Patriots, the Raiders, and the Chargers all have offensive weapons. And so I think we're starting to see maybe that Chiefs defense, if it's like the 13th or 14th or 15th best defense in the league, just throw a number on it. And then you've got the offense maybe getting back to what it was last year. Look out. I mean, that's especially if they can find a way to get a bye. Now, that will require the Patriots tripping up this week against the Bills. I don't think the Patriots lose in week 17 to the Dolphins. But even if they got to go through the wild card round, the Chiefs look like a scary, scary team. Takeaway number three, I feel awful for Josh Gordon. The news breaking yesterday that the Seahawks receiver, has been suspended again. Has his fifth suspension. He's missed more games than he's played in due to suspension over the course of his now 8-year NFL career. Sad story. It's you wish the best for Josh Gordon. Part of the reason the Patriots let him go was they were worried about his dependability. It got them last year when they became a little reliant on him, and then in December another suspension hit. And so here we are again with Josh Gordon. Could be the end of his NFL career. It's hard to say whether or not it will be. What does this leave the Seahawks? Well, I'd be a little concerned about them right now because it does feel like to some degree they have been sort of making it work. And Russell Wilson, this is why I think Russell Wilson is such a viable or had been such a viable MVP candidate before Lamar Jackson really took off. They've been making it work with less. And Russell Wilson's been throwing to guys who haven't been around for very long. DK Metcalf, Jacob Hollister, Rashad Penny's taking a bigger role now. Chris Carson's obviously been there. But they've sort of been duct taping that thing together with a little less. And so pulling one piece out, and I know he hasn't been there for very long, I think could have an effect. Okay, takeaway number four. Man, it does not look good for the Patriots. This whole situation with the Bengals and the taping and what happened. And I want to be clear here. I do believe that football operations, Patriots football operations, was not involved in this. I don't think that Bill Belichick called down to the Patriot to Kraft Sports Productions and said, hey, get some footage of the sideline when you go to Cincinnati this weekend. But, man, it does not look good. The confrontation, Jay Glazer had the tape this weekend. What was on the tape? A tight shot of the sideline. What I'm told is on other parts of the tape, which is the camera panning from a shot of the sideline, then out to what players are running on the field and back to the sideline where the coaches are. That tape does not look like B-roll. That employee that they suspended has been working there for 18 years, so it's hard to believe that he wouldn't know better. And here's what it boils down to with the employee. What is the one piece of equipment the New England Patriots cannot be caught doing anything nefarious with? What is the one piece of equipment that anybody who works for that team has to be overly careful with? It's a video camera. And what'd you get caught with? A video camera. So that's on you. And so, again, I don't think that the Patriots football operations people ordered this. But that tape doesn't look like B-roll. It doesn't look like any sort of beauty shot to enhance a feature piece. And I've worked in TV. Like, I know how this stuff works. Like, it doesn't look like something that you would be using to try to paint a picture of what a guy does. I mean, it looks like what a guy would be. It looks like what a coach would be looking at in a dark room on a Tuesday afternoon. And so, again, I don't think that the Patriots... I don't think that Bill Belichick is guilty of anything here, but for the same reason, a college coach gets busted for lack of institutional control when a booster slips a $100 bill to a recruit, I think Belichick is, at least in that way, is sort of, could be held responsible, where you look at it and you say, well, anything that happens from a competitive standpoint, it falls under your purview. And maybe you didn't order it, but it happened. It doesn't look good, so we got to do something. Okay, takeaway number five. I'm going to give you guys some hope on officiating, all right? All we've heard is doom and gloom about where the officiating situation is and where it's going and all of that different stuff. At the owners' meeting last week in Dallas, it was Wednesday last week, Jeffrey Lurie stood up and said to the other people in the room, we need to change the paradigm. And he wasn't just talking about fixing the problems. He was talking about almost an end to that and saying, we need to stop plugging holes. We need to look at this thing globally. We need to look at the idea of overhauling it. And his whole point was looking at what the fan is looking for in an entertainment product. Looking at this as 32 people, and it's the 31 owners and the Packers president, Mark Murphy, in that room, looking at it as 32 people trying to present something that's appealing to the audience. And so, he opened questions. Why are we throwing flags on things that happen 30 yards away from the action? why do we keep trying to fix this with that fix that wouldn't have applied 5 years? Like, why are we doing all of that? Shouldn't we be just looking at this globally and looking at what's going to create the most appealing product? So I think we could see major change in officiating. He called for a deep dive. He wants the entire league. He wants the league office to do a study on this over the next 3 months and have it ready for the owners in West Palm Beach when they meet there, their annual meetings there in March. And it should be noted, too, Lurie was a big champion in ownership circles of the Sky Judge in 2019. And so there's your glimmer of hope. I think we could see an overhaul of the officiating system going into 2020. And with that, right after this, we're going to get to our special guest. All right, now we're going to bring in our special guest for this week. You know him as a former first-round draft pick, a Super Bowl champion quarterback. He is now the head coach at Elite 11 and the head coach at Lipscomb Academy in Nashville, right, Trent? Right outside of Nashville?
Got it.
Yeah, okay, that's Trent Dilfer. So, Trent, the reason I want to bring you in, and for those that don't follow it, Trent basically sees, I would say, like, pretty much every blue chip quarterback coming up, right? Like, you see them as teenagers. There are lots of kids by now you've seen go into the NFL. So I sort of like view Drew Brees as this transformational type of quarterback who maybe has changed the way that we all look at it. But I want to start here, Trent. Like, when you're sitting at home and you're watching Drew break the record last night, what's going through your head?
I teared up. I didn't think I would. I kind of teared up. I mean, Drew and Peyton and Tom, I played against them all, friends with them, but Drew, for whatever reason, is the guy that, you know, kind of in our quarterback fraternity that I think that we all probably rooted for the most. He's not just a fantastic player, fantastic teammate. I agree with you, transformational type quarterback. He's an incredible human. And he's also gone through some tough stuff, and just to see the 20 years that it's been watching him through college and into the NFL and see the fruit of that labor and the journey, for whatever reason, I got emotional. I was just like, wow, this is amazing that this is Drew Brees, and he just threw more touchdowns than any player in the history of football is mind-boggling.
So, like, when you say he's transformational, this is where I want to sort of launch into this with you. How do you think he changed the way we look at quarterbacks? I think, and I'm trying, look, I was in college at a Big Ten school when he was there, and I remember, like, some of the narrative back then was, well, Joe Tiller's offense is kind of funky, and they do different things, and, you know, he's barely 6 feet tall. How do you think he's sort of maybe transformed the way we look at quarterbacks?
I think he changed the narrative from quarterbacking is about being big, because that was one thing. You had to be big. You had to be strong. You had to have a great arm. You had to throw the deep out. Like, that was the narrative forever. To quarterbacking is about making everybody around you better, completing the ball, that you could throw it earlier, didn't have to throw it harder, that you could, it wasn't about seeing over people, it was about seeing through passing lanes. It was about being a surgeon, not a butcher. I mean, Drew's really the first 6 foot surgeon. He was the first guy that meticulously took you apart with how he played the position. He made you bleed out by 1,000 cuts. He made your offense more robust because you could do more things than just turn your back to the line of scrimmage and rip heaters down the field. You know what I mean? He's a tremendous athlete. I think too often we take away from what a great athlete he is. He's a tremendous foot athlete, but, you know, he extended plays, but he extended them within the pocket. He wasn't a spin out of tackle, scramble, run around, you know, type guy. He was the guy that just subtle little movements, bounced around, made a guy miss in the pocket, went to a little bit to his left, and then threw an accurate ball. He just kind of changed it that it's okay. It's not just okay. Like, this might even be better. Like, I'd rather have a 6-footer that can do this than a 6'5" guy that can wow you half the time, but then tries to, you know, throw it in between three people half the time. And, I mean, I remember being in the league. We played him. I was in Seattle. He was in San Diego before he got hurt. And just hearing Holmgren talk about, this is like watching Joe Montana again. This is watching Steve Young again, as we studied for him. And then he gets hurt, and then, you know, has the transitional period where he's getting the arm right. And I think that's what, you know, Sean Payton's one of the great offensive minds in the history of football. He was probably seeing the same thing that Holmgren was seeing. He was seeing the same things that his peers, myself and other quarterbacks in the league, were seeing, that this is the way to play quarterback.
That's super interesting, though, because you say, all right, so you and Holmgren saw it when he was in San Diego, right? Yet the Chargers spent the 4th overall pick on Phillip Rivers when Drew was going into his 4th year, I believe.
Yep.
So what do you think everybody else was missing?
Well, again, that's a bigger conversation. I mean, we've talked about this. There's only 20 people, in my opinion, that know what they're talking about when it comes to quarterback evaluation. So, you know, that's why I've always said that, you know, Mike Holmgren, Sean Payton, Andy Reid, Norv Turner, there's others now, are the only people that should ever have an opinion on quarterbacks. Because there's only 20 that really know. So somebody that, now Phillip's a great player. I think Phillip's a Hall of Famer.
Well, no, it's nothing against Phillip, but like they drafted
a bad one.
They tried to. I mean, it's nothing against Phillip, but like they tried to replace. You know, like they're like.
Yeah.
I mean, here you're saying like Mike Holmgren's looking across the field and saying, "There's Joe Montana," and yet the Chargers are drafting his replacement when he was what, 24 years old, 25 years old.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Is that just be? How do you say this nice? Now, Phillip's a weird thing because he was also, you know, a unique talent coming out. But
yeah,
the people that had him in the building didn't realize the greatness that was there.
Right.
I guess it's, I mean, Nick Saban said he left the NFL because they didn't sign Drew Brees. Nick Saban knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
So there were those around the league that were like, holy smokes, they're going to let him out of the building? You can't let this guy out of the building.
Yeah. What did you see back then? Like when he was in San Diego, how was it identifiable that what he would like? So, like, I guess like this is a different way of asking the same question. What did everybody miss? But like, what did you see that like made you think? And what did maybe Holmgren see that made him think like there's definitely something there?
What I admired about Drew as a competitor with, you know, against him. Again, when you're a player, you look at film differently, right? You're studying the defense and you happen to see the quarterback that's quarterback in the other team. So it's always a different perspective from a current player. But what would jump out to me is I'm studying, let's just use an arbitrary team. Say we play the Raiders that year and I'm watching Raiders film and the Chargers are playing and Drew's playing against them. I'd be like, okay, oh gosh, they dialed up this blitz. Ooh, this is a tough one. Oh, he's got the answer for it. Oh, their quarterback. Oh, that's Drew Brees. Yeah, he figured that out. Oh, wow, look at this corner. He's squatting on that. Drew Brees hand signals double move. Wow, he saw him squatting on it before the play was snapped. All right, oh, they bring this great inside twist pressure, and that's really hard on the quarterback. Look at him just move to his left, keep his eyes down, realize if they're going to bring this pressure, this is where they're weak in the defense, and he throws the ball exactly where they're weak in the defense. It was like watching, again, that's why I use the surgeon butcher analogy. You know, they both have sharp tools. One saves your life, one makes you a pastrami sandwich. You know, he's a surgeon. He literally looks at every little detail, every minuscule aspect of quarterbacking, and then perfects it. And as a quarterback watching it, you're like, man, I hope I can make that decision Sunday. Man, I hope I see that. How did he know that? What did he study to figure that one out? How did he make that throw? How did he know to throw it that early? Like, you just sat there in admiration of he had all the answers to the test before the game started.
Well, you work with so many of these kids. So how much of that is nature and how much of that is nurture? How much of that is it's just innate? It's instincts? It's like Drew had a mind for it, and how much of it is actually just hard learning, you think?
I think most of it's nurture. I think most of it is you develop these skill sets by passing the ball a lot, by being coached a lot as a quarterback. I mean, I think that's Joe Tiller was a great offensive mind, a great quarterback developer. Where he played high school football, they threw the ball a lot. You know, he just threw the football a lot. He had a lot of opportunities to be a quarterback. And that's a big conversation, though, because that's more than just throwing the ball. Like, he was the quarterback. He owned the room. He owned the ball. He owned the field since he was 15 years old. And just that nurturing of that development on and on and on and on and on. He was never a guy that turned around and handed the ball 42 times a game and then just play action pass. He always had to make these decisions. He was developed, nurtured into looking for the right things when he watched this film. So it's like any of us can watch film. Okay, you can put together your 20 contact lists of people. Hey, let's go watch film and I'll talk about it. Okay, there's only going to be a handful of people that actually know how to watch it from a quarterback's perspective. Everybody can turn on the film. Everybody has access to the tape. Everybody understands X and O's. Only a handful of people can see it through a quarterback's eyes and really see the fullness of what the film has to tell you. Well, Drew was taught how to do that at a very young age. Mm-hmm. So what we've tried to do, I think this is where you're leading me, what we've tried to do in the grassroots space with quarterback development is use Drew, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, now some younger guys as examples of there's a lot of ways to be a great quarterback, but here's one of the consistent things. It's how you approach the game. It's how you approach being the quarterback. And I think Drew Brees is a poster child for how you are the quarterback.
How do you, like, so when you turn on the tape with a 16-year-old kid, you turn on tape of Drew, what are you telling him to look for?
It's super interesting that I'm actually doing a camp Friday, Saturday, Sunday in L.A., one of our Elite 11 Academy camps, and I'm putting together, when I get done with this, I'm putting together a Drew Brees kind of cut-up, and I do it every single camp we do, of kind of showing the kids his magic. Because he resonates with a lot of kids, too. You know, like, there's going to be a lot of 5'10", you know, sophomores in high school there that dad's only 6'1". He's like, I hope to be 6'1". Can I play quarterback long term? And what I use Drew as an example is all the ways you make up for not being the most physical guy on the field. Because when you're the most physical guy on the field, it's pretty easy to teach a quarterback how to do the other stuff. But you got to convince the kid that's not the most physical that you can still be the surgeon. You can still have the subtle little foot movement to see through a passing lane. You still can anticipate throws and make up for your lack of arm strength. You still can dissect a defense and get your offense in a position to be successful. And here's the things to look at. And, you know, I'll put together a Drew Brees tape. I'll also show probably some Joe Burrow stuff in it. I'll show some Tua stuff in it. I'll show some big-time high school quarterback stuff in it and say, look, here's the progression of development that each one of you can go on if you're willing to do the really hard, lonely stuff it takes to be where Drew Brees is.
So when you look at the makeup of the kids that you're working with now, has it changed? Is there more variance because of a guy like Drew? Like, is there more variance in the body types that you see? And that, like, can you actually see that impact when kids come to these camps?
It's the most fascinating thing ever, and this is the best part of this job, is Cam Newton has changed it, and Drew Brees has changed it. So now we have the biggest, baddest dude in the high school. And that wasn't the case 10 years ago.
Right.
10 years ago, that guy was the defensive end or the tight end or the running back or the stud wide receiver or whatever, linebacker. Well, now that kid's the quarterback. That's the Cam Newton effect. So we go all around the country, and you'll go to a camp, and you'll see a 6'6 kid that runs 4.55. That has nice mechanics and is accurate. And like, wow, holy smokes. And then you'll see Ryder Hernandez out of Austin, Texas, who's 5'9", 5'10", just signed with Texas State, and is just an absolute baller. Like, he plays the Drew Brees game. And you see everything in between. And that's the beauty of quarterback. I'm so sick of people putting quarterbacks in a box. Because I'm seeing it. I've seen it for 10 years. I've coached every single one of these guys in the NFL and in Power 5 programs through Elite 11. And I said it 10 years ago when I took over. I said, stop putting them in a box. They don't have to look like John Elway. Like, we like those guys. But we also love the Drew Breeses. We love the Ryder Hernandezes of the world. The kids that are 5'10", that are can absolutely deal. And they know how to play the position with their physical skill set and their physicality. and it's everything in between. So let's stop going into the draft every year saying, well, you know, he's only 6'2.5". He really needs to be bigger. Or, you know, he doesn't quite have the arm talent you need. No, if he can play the position, he can play the position. It doesn't matter what he looks. It doesn't matter what color his skin is, how tall he is, how fast he runs the 40, what offense he played in. It matters if you know how to deal. And, you know, there's a lot of kids that look like Drew Brees that can flat deal, and they're going to play quarterback for a long time.
All right, you mentioned the kid who's going to Texas State. Is there anybody you can think of in either big-time college football or in the NFL that you've coached over the last however many years that you would look at and say, that kid's a direct descendant of Drew?
David Blough, without a doubt. And okay. I'll give you the David Blough story. And I know he hasn't played great the last couple weeks, but David will play in the NFL for 10 years. I don't know how long he'll start. I don't know how great he's going to be. I don't have a crystal ball. But I was up at 1 o'clock in the morning. I tell the story all the time. It was about 1:18 in the morning. I can remember. I was in my house in California. I was studying for a Texas regional for the Elite 11. I'd gone through all the 5 stars, the 4 stars, the 3 stars. I used to watch about 150 kids each week getting ready for these camps. Now my staff does that. But I used to do all of it by myself. And I come upon this kid at some small Texas school that has no stars. I couldn't find him on any recruiting ranking board. Couldn't find him anywhere. Couldn't find a bio on him. And I'm watching this kid just shred Texas football. I mean, it is like watching Drew Brees in high school. I put a note down. Next day I called the staff. I said, we got to dive deep into this kid. I think he's special. It doesn't matter that nobody else knows it. I think this kid's special. So we go to Cowboy Stadium. It was at AT&T. Tony Romo's helping us with a camp that day. He's going to come out, be the guest speaker. He's going to run a drill for me at one of the stations. He was a starting quarterback for the Cowboys, so all the kids are jacked up. And we're about half an hour into camp. He goes, I'm just making up this number. Who's number 56? Because they all wear these jerseys with arbitrary numbers on them. I said, interesting that that's the kid you point out. He goes, he's by far the best kid here. I said, I agree. Now, that camp had 7 5-star kids that went to Texas, Oklahoma, Texas A&M, you name it. This was the cream of the crop. And Tony and I both thought this was the best kid. That was David Blough. Had 0 offers, had 0 traction recruiting. I called Drew Brees. I sent him the tape. Drew's the one that eventually invited him to the Elite 11. Then he signs with Purdue. How ironic is
that?
That's
amazing. David Blough from Texas, all of it.
Of Drew Brees.
Unbelievable. That's amazing. Okay, couple last things to wrap up here, Trent. Do you think it's going too far to look at the last 2 number one overall picks, and Baker Mayfield in 2018 and Kyler Murray in 2019, and say that does not happen if it's not for Drew Brees?
I don't think Russell Wilson happens if it's not for Drew Brees. Yeah, I think every one of them. I think he made it okay to be, he's not 6 feet tall. It's okay to be sub 6 feet and be an NFL star, not just an NFL player, an NFL superstar, a Hall of Famer. And Russell's going to be one. And I think Kyler's going to be a transformational type talent. I think Baker Mayfield can be incredible if he decides to play football like Drew Brees instead of trying to play it like Cam Newton. I think Drew Brees is the poster child for how quarterback should be played, whether you're 6'5 or whether you're 5'10. And I think that's where I always kind of put my stake in the ground and say, if we want to talk about how to train every quarterback, train them like Drew Brees. Now, there are the Lamar Jacksons, there's other special cases, but still, if I'm coaching Lamar Jackson, we're watching Drew Brees tape this offseason on third down. Not first and second down, but we're going to watch him on third down, how he plays a third down game. And if I'm with Cam Newton, he's a free agent, and I'm his quarterback coach, we're watching Drew Brees on red zone tape and how he throws the back line and how he anticipates the corner route and how he hand signals to the right matchup. Like, I'm using Drew, and I love Tom Brady. I do think Tom Brady's the GOAT, but not everybody can play Tom Brady's game. I think Drew Brees is the guy that you look at and you tell every quarterback in the world, if you want to learn how to play quarterback at the highest level, this is the guy to study.
Okay, last thing then, I think that sort of flows into this. And I know it's a complicated question, but I sort of look at, like, so Peyton Manning is like the prototype, right? Like, Tom Brady is the ultimate winner. And like, you look at those two, and that's, I think generationally, we're going to talk about these three together, right? Brees, Manning, Brady, they're all within 4 years of each other. Brady and Brees actually played against each other in college. Brady and Manning had the great rivalry. What do you think Drew Brees' legacy is? What do you think people will be saying about him 20, 30 years from now?
Oh, wow.
It's heavy, right?
Yeah, it is heavy. Okay. 20, 30 years.
Because you said you got emotional.
Talk about guys 20, 30 years ago now.
Right.
I think he's going to – now, Joe has the 4 Super Bowl wins and the 3 MVPs or whatever it is, but I think it's a comparable. I think he'll be always in that discussion of, okay, who's the top 5 quarterbacks of all time? And I never get any these discussions because I think there's like 12 that are equally awesome. I'm like, is greater a word? Like, they're all great.
Yeah.
But I think Drew will forever be in that conversation as one of the greatest quarterbacks that's ever played the game. When you look at quarterbacking holistically, quarterbacking is making your team better. Quarterbacking is obviously the production. Quarterback is the leadership. Quarterback's impact on your franchise. Quarterback's on the legacy of player that came after that player that tried to be just like him. Like, I think there's going to most quarterbacks, and again, Baker would be wise to listen to this, most quarterbacks that try to be like Drew and play like Drew end up playing better than they would have otherwise.
So he's like a teaching tape for the position.
That was the next thing coming up. We use this term all the time is TT. Like, who's the teaching tape? And Drew Brees, to me, is the teaching. Because, again, I can't put Ryder, I'm just using another guy, I can't put David Blau and say, okay, here's Tom Brady. Let's sit down and watch Tom Brady for 10 hours and play like Tom Brady. I can't do that with a lot of people. But I can pretty much do it with every single athlete with Drew Brees and say, you can do this. Like, you can play this way. It's within your skill set to do it.
All right.
And I think he's the ultimate teaching tape guy.
Awesome. Hey, Trent, I always appreciate it. He's the head coach of Elite 11, head coach at Lipscomb Academy in Nashville. You can follow him at Dilfer's Dimes. That's right, right on Twitter. Trent, always appreciate the conversation, bud.
Thanks for having me, buddy.
All right, well, Trent's freaking awesome. Every time I talk to him, I feel like I learn a bunch of stuff. So that is our guest for the week, and now we're going to jump into the mailbag. You guys know how this works. Every week I put the call out for questions. Two ways for you guys to get to us. You can either email me at BreerMailbag@gmail.com. That's my last name, mailbag@gmail.com, all one word, BreerMailbag@gmail.com. Or kind of prefer you do this, call and leave us a voicemail. That way we can get your voice on the podcast, which is kind of cool. So now I'll bring in my producer, Shelby Royston. Shelby, question number one for week 15.
From Tyler, should the Colts consider drafting a quarterback in the upcoming 2020 draft, or should they try to build around Brissett?
So I think Jacoby is a good, at the very least, bridge to the next quarterback, and I think the Colts were smart to sign him. To the deal they signed him to. I know it's a lot of money, but basically it's a 2-year outlay at $15 million per, which is the going rate for a guy who would be your bridge quarterback. And I do think that they will look at quarterbacks. And I can tell you, I would not be surprised if we get to April and the general manager, Chris Ballard, is standing up there saying something like, we couldn't believe Tua Tagovailoa fell to us in the draft. We didn't plan on drafting a quarterback, but the value was just too great. We still love Jacoby, but now we're going to have a guy who can compete with him. So it would not surprise me in the least. They're 6-8 right now. I have to look at their schedule, but they're 6-8 right now. They are, I think, from a roster standpoint, they play the Panthers this week and the Jaguars next week. So could finish anywhere from 6-10 to 8-8. So the question would be whether or not they're going to be in position to take one. But I certainly think it has to be on the radar. The idea that potentially they may need to go shopping for a quarterback again, because that roster is actually getting into a really good spot now, and you're going to have some really good players who are coming into that sweet spot of their careers where they're at the end of their rookie contracts, where they're still cheap for the team, but entering their prime as players. Question number two, Shelby.
From David, what do you think about Jim Harbaugh as a head coach candidate for the Dallas Cowboys? Although he didn't win a Super Bowl, he had a loaded 49ers team nearly playing at their full potential. Seems like an excellent, safe option to lead this very talented Cowboys squad.
Who is this from? What's his name?
David.
David, I'm going to give you a gold star, and sign me up for that, because seeing Jim Harbaugh interact with Jerry Jones would be fantastic. That would be great. I don't think it's going to happen. I think Jim Harbaugh is staying at Michigan. I don't want anybody to say I'm starting any rumors about the rival or anything like that, but But that would be incredible theater. The idea of Jerry Jones and Jim Harbaugh working together. And I do think on the surface of it, it would have some merit. The reason why, I think Jim Harbaugh is Bill Parcells as a coach. And what I mean by that is he comes in, he shakes your program up, he gets immediate results. He's very good at putting a coaching staff together. He's very good at putting a program together. Eventually, he wears everyone out, which is why after 4 or 5 years, he's and look, in most cases, they've been promotions, but you talk to people who are there at the end in San Francisco, who are there in the end in Stanford, and like he has a way of wearing on people. And so like that's the way Parcells was. And it doesn't take away from Parcells' greatness, but it was why after the Giants, he wound up bouncing around a bunch. And so on its surface, because the Cowboys are in a win-now position, it might make some sense on paper. I just can't see Jerry Jones and Jim Harbaugh being a fit working together, which would be the overall problem. Question number three, Shelby.
I would love to hear, this from Chad, I would love to hear your thoughts on Executive of the Year candidates. I'm a biased Packers fan, so naturally I think Brian Gutekunst should win the award with his free agency acquisitions and draft picks.
So Brian Gutekunst is a good pick. I like it. Nailed a couple of edge rushers, Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith. They've drafted well, too. Jair Alexander, one of the best corners in all of football. They were able to draft him after moving around on the board a little bit. I think Rashawn Gary is going to wind up being a really good player there. The roster there is actually in really good shape. They've gotten guys down the line like Marcus Valdez-Scantling. It looks to me like that roster's in good shape and they're in a good position going forward. I also like the job that Jeff Ireland's done in New Orleans. I know he's only the assistant GM, but he's done a really good job of putting that roster together there. And you look at the guys they've gotten through the draft, Sheldon Rankins and Mike Thomas in 2016, Ryan Ramczyk, Alvin Kamara, Marshawn Lattimore, and Marcus Williams in 2017, Marcus Davenport, Tre'Quan Smith in 2018, Eric McCoy in 2019. They've just nailed draft pick after draft pick after draft pick. I like what Ireland's done, so I'd put Ireland in that category. I'd put Gutekunst in that category. I'd also throw in there your John Lynch, who I think's done a really nice job of building that roster over the last couple of years. Adam Peters, his right-hand man, has been integral to that too. Right now, I think I'd give it to Eric DaCosta, the general manager of the Ravens, because not only is that roster in really good shape, they've done some things with the purpose, and they've fixed problems on the fly. All right? Number one, doing things with the purpose, look at the way that their season ended last year. The Chargers put 7 defensive backs on the field to deal with the speed of Lamar Jackson and all of the complications that the option game brought to you. Well, what do? They sign a 230-pound jackhammer in Mark Ingram. And they did that with a purpose. Now they became even more difficult to deal with. They drafted Hollywood Brown and Miles Boykin. Miles Boykin, one of the best blocking receivers in the draft. They know they need that the way they were going to play offense. Hollywood Brown, the guy who can take the safety out of the box and prevent you from creeping up on the running game. So those things were done with a purpose. And then as far as spackling together holes on the roster, right? Like finding a way to fix holes on the roster on the fly. Signing Josh Bynes off the street at the beginning of October was huge for settling things down on their defensive front, trading for Marcus Peters to turn corner into a legitimate strength once Jimmy Smith came back from injury, and joining the group there with Marlon Humphrey and Brandon Carr. I think Eric DaCosta has done a fantastic job across the board in his first full year as GM. Ozzie Newsome deserves credit too, of course, for drafting Lamar Jackson, but all of the things that they've done to try to make it work, doing things with a purpose, finding a way to fix holes on the fly. Eric DaCosta would be my executive of the year right now.
We have a voicemail.
All right, let's go.
Hey, Albert, it's Matt. Just curious, got some interesting teams in this playoff picture as we get toward the end of the season. And I'm just curious what your perspective is as a fan of the league. Do you have any particular matchups that you'd like to see in the Super Bowl, whether it's 2 veteran quarterbacks against each other, 2 young quarterbacks, maybe a low-scoring defensive game? Just curious what you thought. Thanks.
All right, so Matt, my dream matchup for Super Bowl 54, and maybe it's like a sentimental pick now because of what we just saw on Monday night. Maybe it's reactive to what we've seen all season. I'd love to see the Ravens and the Saints. I think seeing that Ravens offense on that stage Seeing the effect that having an offense built that way, winning a Super Bowl, would have on the NFL, having a quarterback like that in the saddle for a Super Bowl winner would have on the NFL, would have on quarterbacking in general, I think would be fascinating. And to see Drew Brees get back there, I just love the storyline, the idea of the pain that they've gone through to get there, right? Like the fact that they went through the Minneapolis miracle at the end of the 2017 season. They went through the pass interference thing at the end of the 2018 season. To see Drew Brees back on that stage, to see Drew Brees playing for a second championship, to see Sean Payton back on that stage, one of the greatest offensive minds of his generation, one of the best head coaches of his generation. I just think that would be a fascinating contrast in styles of offense, a fascinating contrast in styles of coaches, John Harbaugh and Sean Payton. And for so many people, there'd be legacy things involved. I mean, again, like you have Harbaugh versus Payton. One guy becomes a two-time Super Bowl winner out of that. Sign me up for that. Ravens Saints in Miami on February. I believe it's the 2nd. I think February the 2nd this year. Question number 4, Shelby.
From David. Will the legalization of sports betting being passed in more and more states, how do you think that will impact the NFL long term? Do you think we will see sports books on site in certain stadiums? Mm-hmm. Do you think we will see more player suspensions like what we saw recently with Josh Shaw of the Arizona Cardinals?
This guy's David, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good question, David. I would tell you that I think the effect that you're going to see in the way the league does business, it's going to help to get the CBA done, I think, in the short term, because there are owners that are anxious to start working on gambling. To get gambling done, they've got to get broadcast done. To get broadcast done, they've got to get the CBA done. So there are some owners, I think Jerry and Kraft are among them, that sort of view the CBA as small potatoes compared to the other things that they've got on their plate. They want to get the CBA done so they can get broadcast done so they can start to work on gambling. What are we going to see from a business standpoint gambling-wise? I think we're going to see in-stadium prop betting become the thing that the league is really going to try to monetize, where you're going to have got people in the stands betting on props while the game is going on. And almost turning it, making the NFL interactive, because the younger generation wants everything to be interactive. And so I think that that's going to be something that we are going to see. As for the effect on the larger scope, and you mentioned the sportsbook on site, here's what I think is interesting. The NFL went back into LA in 2016. They found that it was very difficult to compete against people's habits. People's habits in Southern California for a long time was to sit at home and get the best game on their TV, not leave their couch on Sunday, not get into a car and fight through traffic, not go sit in a parking lot for 2 hours and grill out and drink and all of that. It was to have everything at their fingertips at home. And the league found that it was very, very difficult to compete against that. It has found that it's very difficult to compete against that, and the Rams and the Chargers are feeling that. Well, what's the competition in Vegas? The competition in Vegas is going to be the sports book, because that's how people consume the NFL in Vegas. And so I think what's going to be most interesting about the Raiders entering Vegas is if there's any sort of attendance issue, they're going to realize we're competing against the sports book. What would be the easy fix to that? The easy fix to that would be putting a sports book in the stadium. And if you can put a sports book in the stadium in Vegas, what do you think 31 other teams are going to want to do? They're going to want to put sports books in their own stadiums. And so I think that that's where we're going to see potential, and I don't think it's the next couple of years, maybe 5 years from now, 10 years from now, the Raiders to be viable in Vegas, to be a top option in Vegas, to maximize who they are in Vegas, may feel like we have to put a sports book in the stadium. And that's going to lead to a larger discussion where other teams are going to want to do it too. I don't think this happens until gambling is legal in every NFL city, but when we get there, I certainly think it will be a possibility. I don't think that we're going to see a rash of players getting in trouble the way that Josh Shaw did, though. That's where I would draw the line. Shelby, question number 6.
One more voicemail.
Hey, Albert. This is Dante. Call from Oklahoma. I just want to ask, say you was the owner of an expansion team or a GM, whatever, and say you got 3 years to win a Super Bowl. You got 3 years to win a Super Bowl. How many quarterbacks would you take before you got to Lamar Jackson? Thanks.
Wow, Dante, that's a good question. So you have 3 years to win a Super Bowl. Okay. And again, I don't see the questions beforehand. I want my answers to be natural. I'm going to go through the league and give you the quarterbacks I would take before Lamar. I would take Aaron Rodgers before Lamar for the next 3 years. Wow, this is tough. I might take Russell Wilson before Lamar for the next 3 years. I would take Pat Mahomes before Lamar for the next 3 years. We got three. Deshaun Watson's sort of a toss-up. Sam Darnold, I think, is a toss-up. I love Baker Mayfield, but I don't know that he gets there that quick. I mean, so I'd say Mahomes, Wilson, Rodgers, and that might be it. You're just talking the next 3 years, so injury is less of a concern. Maybe those three. Mahomes, Russell, and Rodgers. Let's go with that. Three quarterbacks. You like it, Shelby?
Yeah, it's a good one.
Okay. Three before. That's a great question, though. Thank you, Dante. And thank you to all you guys for listening, for subscribing, for downloading, and for calling in to the voicemail. Again, you guys know, you guys want to hear your voice on here? It's very easy. All you got to do is call in, and the voicemail is up all week. 201-596-4346. You can leave a voicemail. I'll answer your question here on the pod. You can also email if you're a little bashful. BreerMailbag@gmail.com. That's my last name. Mailbag@gmail.com. All one word. BreerMailbag@gmail.com. We're always looking for your feedback too. And if you've got feedback for the pod, you want this to be a better experience, you think you know how to make it a better experience, you can get to me on social media at Albert Breer on Twitter, at Albert_Breer on Instagram, at Albert R. Breer on Facebook. And if you guys want more NFL content, we've got a ton of it here at the MMQB. All in one podcast feed now. My podcast, Jenny and Connor's podcast, the Monday Morning podcast, the Gambling podcast, all of that's on the MMQB NFL podcast feed. You can also get the News podcast, which I do twice a week. We do 5 days a week. If you guys are looking for a place to get all of your NFL news, catch up on what happened during the day in bite-sized form, about a five-minute podcast each and every day, you can get that on the MMQB News feed. And you can get both those, the MMQB NFL podcast and the MMQB News podcast, on Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. Same time next week. I'll see you guys then.